Do you believe in Santa? Santa Claus?
Hmm?
You believe in him? Interesting. Didn't quite expect the answer. Usually my expectation is that people are saying no, and then I surprise them. Maybe, do you believe in Santa? Santa Claus? No, ne? I believe in Santa. And then people are usually surprised. How can it be that a Buddhist monk is a believer in Santa Claus? I'm in my mid-50s, and if at 5 years age your belief in Santa, that may sound okay. But if you're 55 and you still believe in Santa, is there something wrong with me? But now I have to obviously explain in which sense I mean that. And I mean it in a symbolic sense, because I see Santa Claus as a symbol, as a metaphor, as an allegory, whatever you want to call it. Because what is Santa's job? What is he doing? Ah, to give gifts, ne, for all the kids. Exactly. So it must be a pretty tough job. I think it's the most seasonal job I've ever heard of. You have got all the work in one single day. So you must be working very hard. But he is obviously making good karma. Because giving gifts to all the kids in the world, if that is not good karma, what else would be? Because after all, you don't have to pay when you get a gift from Santa. He gives it for free. That is the idea. That's the whole concept. So, and in this sense, I believe in Santa, in the sense that he is to me a symbol of dana, a symbol of generosity, a symbol of giving, a symbol of kindness. A chaga, as we say in Pali. Letting go, giving. And the other thing I find really interesting, what does he look like normally? I mean, it must be a tough job, and it can be very cold, and you never know, the reindeer may be playing up, and maybe don't want to pull the sleigh, and his beard may get frozen, and then in one day in the year he has to manage to get the gifts to all the kids. But have you ever seen him getting grumpy about that? Have you ever seen Santa grumpy, angry? What does he look like? Old man in the beard, but smiley and happy. Smiley and happy. And again, this is the symbolism I believe in. Because not surprisingly, he's making so much good karma by giving, by generosity, by sharing, by kindness, that he receives the result of that. And the result of giving and sharing and good karma, what we call punya, is happiness. So this is the two things. He's a symbol to me for generosity. And I believe in Santa in the sense that I believe in punya. I believe in efficacy of action. I believe in the functioning of karma. And in particular, I believe that making good karma, making punya, will bring you happiness. And that is something I heard from the Buddha and take on trust. But that is also something we all can experience. is one of the hallmarks of the Buddha's teaching. That we are not just blindly believing it. Now, this is sometimes in the world, and people may blindly believe whatever some supposed authority is telling them. The Buddha never demanded blind belief. He always recommended to investigate and figure things out for oneself. Now, after careful analysis and investigation, this is what he encourages, not blind belief. And this one is fortunately an easy one to investigate. All you have to do, grab a carrot, feed some of the horses here. This is one thing which I sometimes do. And one feels quite happy, because the horses are so happy eating a few carrots. I'm always surprised now how happy you can make a horse by giving them a few carrots. And I was surprised once in the supermarket when I saw that a big bag of carrots, I think, was only $1.99. And for these $2, quite a few horses being so happy. So usually I'm not feeding monks so much. My experience is more feeding horses, but my hope is when you are feeding the monks that you're also getting some happiness straight away, and maybe even more. Now, the Buddha encourages to investigate in our own experience and verify whatever he is telling us. If someone just tells you to blindly believe and not to investigate, not to look for yourself, and to me this is always a danger sign. Not so in the dispensation of the Buddha. It is encouraged that we investigate ourselves. And this one is just so easy to do, just feeding an animal. Just feeding for Xmas season now, and feeding your friends, family, giving a gift to someone. And we can feel it in our own heart. This is why we traditionally do the Anumodana chanting here, the blessing. After the food has been offered, everyone coming in, and then we are doing the traditional Anumodana. Anumodana means rejoicing along with. One feels happy for what the others are doing. But for yourself, when you come to the monastery, you offer, and then you listen to the Anumodana chant of the monks, that is also the opportunity to switch on one's faculty of mindfulness, sati, sati sampajanya, and check out in your own heart, what does it feel like when you have just done an act of giving and generosity to the Sangha? And if one has the mindfulness and switches on full awareness, clear comprehension, one can usually notice that the mind is elated, joyful, happy in a very positive and wholesome sense, because you have done something good. And then we already have some proof from our own experience about the Buddha's teaching, that good karma is equivalent to happiness. We may not be able to say that yet for all kinds of good karma the Buddha has recommended, but for the one we have tried out now, generosity, we can feel, we can notice, oh, it actually works, I do feel happy. And I'm very happy that we have the symbol of Santa Claus reminding us of that. With his big smile, or he has to work hard. Must be particularly tough in Australia, and he's more equipped for the Northern Hemisphere winter. And the poor reindeer, they must be struggling as well here at 30 plus degree. So my recommendation that try it out is the same with all the other acts of punya. When you come here, and usually when we enter the Dhamma hall, what do we do when we enter the Dhamma hall? as good Buddhists. We bow to the Buddha. We express our reverence, veneration, respect, devotion, faith to the Buddha by bowing 3 times. Is that papa, is that bad karma, or is that punya, good karma, when we bow to the Buddha? It's good karma, no? Because respecting what is worthy of respect is one of the great blessings in the Mangala Sutta. It's good karma. What is the result of that good karma if we humble ourselves and pay respect and express deference and reverence and veneration to the being which is most worthy of respect, reverence and veneration in the whole universe? What is the future karmic result of that particular good punya? Yeah? Exactly. You will receive respect and veneration yourself. You will be in high zone, a high society rebirth. Whereas if you are an arrogant, conceited, big-headed, looking down on others, rejecting others contemptuously, the result is that we are in a low rebirth, a low social position. So paying respects to the Buddha is certainly good karma, punya. And again, I encourage you, as the Buddha says, don't just believe that, but try it out. It's also good to switch on mindfulness when you bow. Because if you have been doing that for many years, and one grows up with that traditional, that's what we do, one may do it rather a little bit mindlessly without much sati. But this gentleman, when he came in, I was very impressed. You bowed with very strong mindfulness, strong sati sampajanya, full awareness and mindfully you bowed, carefully, slowly. And if you do it like that, then it's even more good karma. But you will also notice what it feels like. What does it feel like when we bow? It's actually amazing, although we lower our body, for the mind that is actually uplifting. If it is someone who truly deserves it, and no one deserves it more than the Buddha. So as we lower the body, the mind is soaring and is already experiencing the joy and happiness. And you can believe me when I say that, or you can believe the Buddha, but you can also simply try it out. But you may notice the more you understand what that actually means, Buddha, the more you study about the Buddha, the more you learn about his life, and the more you learn about his outstanding qualities, the more you learn about his virtue, his compassion, his wisdom, his knowledge, his understanding, his psychic powers, his samadhi, his physical beauty, his supreme struggle and sacrifice he put forth to attain liberation. Now, the more we know about that, the stronger our faith and devotion will be, and then when we bow, we feel even more happy. And so this is all open to investigation and is encouraged to investigate and to analyze and to check the data yourself. The data is all what you experience in your heart. And this is extremely valuable, because try to get people doing good things. You can be nagging, you can tell them, you can try to control them, you can try to twist their arm, you can try to blackmail them, you can try to wheedle them. Maybe you try that sometimes when you try to convince someone to do something which you think is a good thing. But you see, once people notice that making good karma makes them happy, what is going to happen? someone has noticed now, oh yeah, when I practice generosity, when I share and I do dana, I feel really happy. What's the next thing going to happen? Oh yeah, he may attain samadhi, or she. But what I meant, if someone feels so happy when they do an act of generosity, I think they're very likely to do it again. Because things you enjoy and things which make you happy, do I have to wheedle you and convince you and blackmail you to do it again? What is your favorite pastime? Watching cricket or rugby? Is it actually over, the series against England now, or is it still going? Ashes, is it? Ashes, the last one today? Third one only, okay. I don't notice Dr. Garmini is into cricket. Do they have to wheedle or coerce you to watch that? Or do you watch that quite happily on your own? No one, your wife doesn't have to force you. There may be other things she's been trying for many years to somehow get you doing it, and it may not be successful. But the stuff which we really like, which we enjoy, because we know, we are convinced it makes us happy, and no one has to push us, we are doing it on our own. This is why this simple step is completely sufficient. Once a person knows what actually is punya, what kind of actions generate good karma, and secondly, they notice whenever I do that, it makes me feel really happy. You can just let go and the rest will happen by themselves. They will just make more and more. Because the more punya they make, the better the happiness. So over time, they really get into it. And it becomes the predominant activity. This is the case with a stream enter, the Mutta Chaga. They have fully released their generosity because they're so much into it. This is their default mode, just giving and sharing. It's one characteristic of someone who has attained the first stage of enlightenment, because they really understand what it's all about. And especially in our time now, here in Brisbane, they have just opened the borders, and so far we hardly had any COVID here. Long periods there were no cases in all of Queensland, 5.5 million people. And I think altogether we had 7 deaths in 2 years, and 6 of them were in the first year, only 1 in the beginning of this year. So no one here is quite used to have the pandemic actually being in Queensland. And now after the opening and with the new Omicron variant, every day numbers are going up. I think they're saying it's about doubling every 2 days, so a very steep exponential increase, because it came in from all the people who are now allowed and are traveling into Queensland. And so one can watch that every day, the numbers going up. 4, 8, suddenly 30, 50, 80, 200, 400, now we're at 800. And as people are watching the daily infections and they're going up, often their mind is going down, going down. And then comes anxiety, apprehensions, fear, can I get it, can I catch it? Can elderly relatives get it and get really serious or die? And the one danger is when people focus too much on that, that the mind can become dejected, kind of depressed or anxious or both, anxious and depressed mind state. That wouldn't help anyone. In fact, we all know that our immune system is functioning better if we are joyful, happy, and confident, whereas if we are anxious and depressed, now that is also depressing the immune system, and it means our ability to deal with any kind of virus or bacteria or sickness is diminished. In fact, I remember reading a study where they showed that one of the most serious coexisting conditions for getting COVID more strongly is actually anxiety disorder. People with anxiety disorder had a similar COVID risk, like, I think, diabetes and obesity, increased risk. So again, we have to switch on mindfulness. And when you check now every day, and when you start looking at the figures going up, be careful and have some mindfulness also to check your heart. What is your heart like? And when you notice that you spend hours and hours just looking at all these figures and what may happen, and then you are thinking what could happen and what if I can't breathe, and this is not productive. And you have to notice that with these kind of thinking, you're causing your mind to become dejected and anxious and apprehensive. And when we will notice that, then it's important to get the mind out of the hole which we have dug ourselves in. So when you feel dejected and apprehensive about the pandemic, what is one way of getting the mind out of that? A punya, a good karma. Because we just talked about how much happiness that gives us and how it makes the mind bright. Again, the happiness and brightness and energy, that all goes together. If the mind is happy and joyful, then the mind is also bright and has energy. If the mind is dejected, depressed, and anxious, then we have lower energy and the mind is dark. So a great way, if you ever notice now that you get overwhelmed by fear, by dejection, is to do acts of punya, doing acts of good karma, doing acts of generosity, chanting, listen to pavitta, pivot, just bowing to the Buddha, just putting the mind onto the Buddha. There's a danger of mitra samadhi, the wrong samadhi. The mind is just obsessed with the pandemic and is kind of absorbing on that. And then the result is that anxiety will explode. So we have to put the mind onto a wholesome, inspiring object. You can reflect on your generosity. This is probably what Santa is doing the rest of the year. Maybe to expand on that symbol, because it's a somewhat difficult job, and it's so highly seasonal, you have to do all the work in one day. What do you do all the rest? It's this elderly person with his white beard and just sitting around for the whole year and counting the days for next Christmas when he has to work again. So I haven't heard that being described before, but my theory is that Santa for the other time in the year is probably doing Chaga Nusrati. He's remembering all the good things he has been doing on that Christmas day. And this is why he is still happy when the next Christmas comes around. He doesn't get depressed and bored, nothing to do, I have no work. He's just sitting every day and remembering the good things he has been doing last Christmas. And similar, we should do that with our generosity. So if you ever feel down now in the pandemic, remember your great acts of giving. And straight away from that recollection, your mind will come out of that dejected state. Now we have to practice the middle way, Majjhima Patipada, the very first teaching of the Buddha. Also in the way how we deal with information, because nowadays there's information overload. And if you read of everyone who may have had COVID and may have died, and what happens in all these different places in the world where it's just bad, it can become Mitra Samadhi, and this information which you get is just too much, it's no longer actionable. We have to distinguish actionable information, information which is actually relevant. Now, right now you may want to know what is roughly the figures every day and what is the regulations which apply. Because it wouldn't be helpful to go to the other extreme than simply denying it and just not checking the news at all, and one has no idea whether there are any cases or nothing. That is the other extreme. And so we just get sufficient information that we can analyze it and then adjust our behavior appropriately according to our own risk profile, which is very different for different age groups and depending on what kind of sickness you have, and then depending on what kind of place you're going. Obviously, dancing in an enclosed nightclub all night is much more risky than taking a walk in the open, which has hardly any risk. So one just gets enough data that one can analyze it and then make rational decisions, what kind of behavior fits your own risk-benefit profile, and avoiding the extreme. One extreme is denial. I just don't even know what's happening. The other extreme is Mitra Samadhi, all day just on COVID and the figures and thinking how bad it all is. Middle way, just getting enough information that you can use the information for making wise and rational decisions. One extreme again would be to just lock yourself into your home and never go out and never meet another human being. And then you can't really get COVID, but is that a realistic way of living? And would one want to live like that? And the other extreme is not to care at all, but if you are in a high-risk group and you go into very high-risk infection places, again, then one may have a risk of dying. So in middle way, transcending these two extremes, is a rational decision about one's own risk profile and the risk-benefit. And any interaction with any other human has got a certain risk of any kind of infection, not just COVID. But usually as human beings, we don't want to completely abandon interaction with other human beings. So one has to find the middle way between that. And in particular, make sure whenever your mind goes down, now this is what mindfulness has to notice, and it can be a little bit pernicious because this pandemic is going for a long time now. And when our mind very gradually becomes darker and more depressed, often people don't notice. It's much easier to notice when your mind state changes very quickly. If someone is provoking us and saying something really offensive, immediately we flare up, and this is quite easy to pick up, strong emotion coming up. Much more tricky is these long-term things, the mind gradually getting more dejected, getting a little bit darker over a long period, and then mindfulness has to be very sharp to notice it. And if you ever notice that, punya, good karma, is a way to brighten the mind without any bad side effects. Some people claim, as we're getting closer to New Year, some people claim they can brighten their mind very successfully with a glass of whiskey or a bottle of champagne. Is that a suitable way of brightening the mind? No, doesn't work. This is breaking the precepts. And even if it may give a short-term relief, it's well known that alcohol is actually increasing depression, and virtually any negative mental state will actually get worse from taking alcohol. So don't try to brighten your mind by having a drink, unless it's a carrot juice or something, but no alcoholic drinks. Brighten your mind by making punya, paying respects to the Buddha, reflecting on your generosity, and then using the happiness to deepen that into samadhi. So now you know why I'm a believer in Santa. Is there any comments, any questions? Do you always check out your mind? Whether it's in good shape, not good shape, whether you're depressed or anxious, would you be able to tell that? Do you know? Now, this is mindfulness. Not just the thoughts, but the mood, the emotion. Would you always know whether you're excited or bored, sleepy or restless, distracted or focused, joyful, dejected? Now, this is very important to always watch that.
Dana, I think more to do, in addition to Dana, I think it's important also that we practice Bhavana, and that's where the mind can be checked.
Someone is pointing out, additionally to Dana, we should practice Bhavana. Additionally to generosity, we should practice meditation. And I couldn't agree more, but I still want to add, we should also practice virtue. And then we have the traditional set of dana, sila, bhavana. And I totally agree with you. So I focused in this talk from Santa Claus. This is a better symbol for generosity, but I totally agree with you. And we also have to practice virtue. Now, because when we keep our precepts, that is another source of happiness. And then the happiness we get from generosity will be further reinforced and fostered and strengthened by the happiness we get from being virtuous and keeping precepts. And by then we have so much happiness that it becomes quite easy to practice bhavana. The bhavana means meditation, starting with settling the mind in samadhi. And the samadhi has as a crucial ingredient the rapture and bliss. So once you have lots of happiness from generosity and from virtue, it is not so difficult when you then focus inside and you look at the breath, or you repeat Buddha-ho, Buddha-ho, or you practice metta, may all beings be happy and at ease, may all beings be happy and at ease. The mind will settle down easily and quickly because you're so happy. And once your mind has settled down easily and quickly in samadhi, then is a good time when the mind emerges from that, with the hindrances suppressed, then it's a good time to practice vipassana, insight, wisdom. And then you can contemplate the uncertainty we experience right now. Because why are we ultimately afraid about the virus? because we're afraid that we may die, or people we love may die. That is a fear. Dying is simply a result of bodies being impermanent. Dying is a result of these four elements of earth, water, heat and wind being impermanent. So we contemplate the impermanence of this body and the impermanence of other bodies. And when we contemplate the impermanence of all bodies, then our heart can let go of all bodies. And once you have let go of all bodies, including your own one, would you be afraid of any virus? I doubt it. But it's all open for investigation, try it out. The Buddha says once you have understood that this body is impermanent completely and fully, and you have all attachment to the body abandoned, you have let go of all attachment to the body, you will not be afraid of dying. Will not be afraid of anything happening to the body. But again, you don't have to believe that in blind faith. You can investigate that. The more you can see the impermanence of the body and the more you can let go, the less you'll be worried what may happen to the body. The other thing we are afraid of as a virus is, of course, the dukkha vedana. Oh, that may be painful. If I can't breathe, there may be so much pain and suffering. Isn't it? No, that's the other fear. So we can contemplate a vedana feeling, particular painful feeling. It's also impermanent. And if you can really see that all feeling, whether pleasant or painful or neutral, is impermanent, what is the result of that? If you can really see it, your heart will let go, will no longer identify, will no longer attach to dukkha vedana or sukha vedana or any feeling. When you're no longer attached to any feeling, then there's no further work left to be done for your bhavana, then the bhavana is bhavitang, is developed, then you have finished the Eightfold Path. That is enough. Just fully seeing the impermanence of the three kinds of feelings, pleasant, painful, neutral, with the resulting effect that you completely let go of all three feelings. And this is already Nibbana. And then you won't worry about anything. So I fully agree with you. If you do practice generosity, let's also practice virtue. If you practice generosity and virtue, let's also practice bhavana, meditation, samatha and vipassana. Yes, David. Now, even thinking about impermanence is usually already beneficial. But to realize impermanence on the level that the mind really lets go, that can usually not be fully accomplished just by thinking about it, because thinking is too superficial. That is only chintamaya, panya, is only wisdom based on thinking and hearing, listening what you're learning. This is why we have to build up bhavana based on punya, based on generosity, based on virtue, and based on samadhi. This is the difference if you're just the average person in the middle of their normal life and now they start thinking about impermanence. That will not usually work to completely let go of all the three kinds of feelings. Quite naturally not. But if a person has a huge store of punya and has been observing the precepts diligently, meticulously, impeccably for a long time, and then has developed samadhi, so that they actually attain even jhana, and then they come out of that, and the hindrances are suppressed, central desire, ill will, tiredness, restlessness, and doubtness is gone, suppressed. And then they really observe impermanence, not so much thinking about it, just seeing it, just recognizing it, just observing it, just experiencing it. And then the effect can occur that there's true nibbida, another mind turning away from these impermanent things. Based on that nibbida, there can be true viraga, true dispassion. Based on that dispassion, then there's real letting go. So that is a difference. And if someone just starts thinking about it, they may also calm down. Even just thinking about, this body is impermanent, and one day I will die for sure in any case, and everyone will die. Even this kind of thinking can already have quite a calming effect. But you're quite correct, only if it is based on generosity, virtue, samadhi, and then direct observation rather than thinking. Someone is just pointing out that dana sila bhavana we should also practice in our daily life and be aware of our mind states. And again, I totally agree. But that is dana sila bhavana. Even samadhi, the samadhi factors in the Eightfold Path is white effort, white mindfulness, white concentration. So if in your daily life you notice now you are dejected or now you are angry, this is mindfulness. And then you make an effort to abandon the dejection by doing some punya, so to make your mind bright again. Now this is white effort, samavayama. So it is possible to do a lot of the sila, samadhi panya, or dana sila bhavana. Now you can do a lot in daily life. There's no contradiction. A full samadhi in daily life will be somewhat difficult, but a lot of the other factors can be done quite successfully. And then the samadhi and the more profound wisdom you may have to develop when you have quieter time, not while you're attending an important work meeting. At that stage you will probably have to do a less refined level of bhavana. But then when you have your meditation time in the evening or free time on the weekend and so on, and then you do it on a more refined level and can then get it deeper. Sadhu, yeah. Couldn't agree more. And don't separate your life and your meditation. That should be one thing. Because the meditation is about your life. And our life should become meditation.